brand identity to me, you know, your brand is the space that an individual or company occupies in someone's mind. I teach personal branding, so that's what I'm often, you know, encouraging people to think about. What do people say about you? And if you are a brand, you need to be thinking about, like, what is your story? All of this is rooted in story. So when we talk about personal branding, is what is your story and how do you want to represent that to the world in a way that aligns closely with what you actually want to stand for?
Yo, Beyond the Fairway, man, back at it again. Will Lowry, Dougie Fresco in here. Look, Will, Rory McIlroy, Shane Lowry just defeated Martin Trainer and Chad Ramey in a playoff at the Zurich. The fact that Rory and Shane had to birdie the last hole to get into the playoff in regulation, only one hole. Chad hit this second shot, snap hooked it up against the grandstands. And Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry doing what the Irish do, the luck of the Irish, I guess you could say, down at TPC Louisiana this week. Will, it's just so interesting that this David and Goliath matchup.
It is. I mean, and what is so funny is that, you know, there's certain times that you think Rory McIlroy is like, all right, he just ho-hum about his golf. He's in and out. He just getting older. And I love the quote that Shane Lowry had, my cousin, without the E, which is a little weird. He said he's getting old, but he still moves the needle a little bit. And I think that right there is so funny of Shane. And she kind of shows a relationship between Shane and Rory, which is so dope.
Dude, Shane Lowry is one of the dopest people. And I'm going to just say this real quick and we'll move forward. But Shane had that double eagle at the Farmers earlier this year. I was on the broadcast for PGA Tour Live. I was on the call. I actually saw it live. I was standing like 6 feet away from him. He gave the caddy a high five. He walked over to me and gave me that look in the eye, no diddy, where he was kind of like, yeah, you're going to get some of this love. I just made a double eagle. You going to get. And I was like, you know what? That Shane, I'm coming in here. So go ahead. Y'all go peep that on YouTube. Me and Shane gripped him up. But it's just interesting, Will, like how I'm watching the Zurich Classic, and I feel like coming down the stretch, there was Zach Blair was in the mix. Martin Trainer, mm-hmm. Chad Ramey. I'm sorry, but those aren't names I'm tuning in to really watch coming down the stretch. Thank God for McIlroy and Lowry. But what's interesting, Will, to me, is we talk about the viewership of golf and the state of the game right now. I had the opportunity for Bleacher Report a week and a half ago. We said last week, we talk about it this week, to be a part of the broadcast for the Grass Clippings Open, which is a par 3 high-stakes golf league that was built out of the guys from the brand Grass Clippings. And brand kind of teases the conversation that we're going to get into with our 19th hole discussion with Jordan Rogers, Will. But the Grass Clippings League is a group of teams that have team owners. I'll tell you one, Dave Stewart, the guy that is the manager for the Dodgers, owns one of the teams in this league. So a person will buy a team. All right. So the team costs $160,000. When they launched this league, they had 10 teams. They had 10 people say, hey, I'm investing in this. And already it's grown to almost 20 teams. 20 teams, Will. And on a team, you can have 8 players. The players can be paired in twosomes. They're playing par 3 golf in a tandem scramble format. Okay, so it's a very interesting. So they're amateur golfers that are competing. So there was last week, there was $40,000 to first place. But the money doesn't go to the players. The money goes to the team owner.
So it's kind of like a NASCAR thing, kind
of? Well, exactly. NASCAR format, but the owners of the team can then leverage NIL to sponsor or provide money or funds into the league. Hey, Johnny Football. Johnny Manziel was a part of one of the teams there in that Grass Clippings League. It's just interesting to me because we saw PGA Tour live. Okay, there's things. They're fighting for eyeballs and growing the game. But now we're seeing the good, the Brian Bros, etc., starting their own, or they've had it, but they're getting more eyeballs than the PGA Tour and LIV combined, even though LIV over the week in Australia, record sales of 94,000 people showed up there at Adelaide to watch the LIV golf this week. Maybe LIV should just stay there in Australia, but I just find it very interesting, Will, how the tours are competing with these YouTube stars for eyeballs and viewing of the game that we all love, the game of golf.
Yeah. I guess it's saying that what type of appetite you have for golf, especially when it comes from an audience perspective, because I just saw where they said down in Louisiana that they had the largest galleries at TPC Louisiana this week. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's a different format. So maybe PGA Tour should give some thought of this type of format, how golf could probably be more acceptable for those who want to enter the game, but they kind of can't do the individual aspects. I don't know, but it provides a different perspective for sure.
Yeah, it really does. And I think it all goes to branding, which is why we're going to go ahead and step into the 19th hole and talk to Jordan Rogers a little bit about, well, maybe how these tours can either come together, grow the game. I don't know, but we need an expert's opinion here.
Hell yeah.
Yo, 19th hole. You know, it's a special time of our show where I get to sip my bourbon. I get to get my your digs on that nature nectar right here. Today, going back to Old Faithful, will it? The bottle is just as sexy as this taste. But, Will, we got to welcome in Jordan Rogers today for this 19th hole segment as I go ahead and pour this beautiful nectar into this crystal. Jordan, what's up, man? How you living today?
Man, somebody stole my drink.
That's a beautiful day.
Oh, I got to see. There you go.
I'm in Texas, true to Texas. So
I ain't got nothing. Hey, you know what, Dougie? I'm so excited because when you think about brand builders, when you think about people who dissect brands, who has a different lens on whatever the hell they're looking at, this guy right here. And okay. I'm so interested to see. First of all, let me tell you about JR, right? So JR and I had the privilege to go to Tiger Woods' reveal of Sunday Red, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody asks me all the time, like, was that a setup? Because for some context, Tiger Woods called Jordan out, right?
Ooh.
On stage. And I was like, you know, and everybody asked me, was that a setup? Was there something to it? I said, no, I was there. Tiger Woods was sitting right there in his chair, and they had a conversation. Tiger Woods and Jordan had an actual conversation. They were talking back and forth. They were conversing. And that's when I realized, I knew Jordan was the truth, but that's when I realized he was the truth, right?
Okay.
And I just want to say, Jay, is honored to have such a marketing mind, a brand builder mind on a podcast. I wish we had a round of applause button.
We can put it in post. We'll go ahead and get it to it. We'll put it in there.
My hot breath ain't gonna do that. But no, welcome to Beyond the Fairway, Jay Money.
Thank you. You know, Will, I got the backstory on that. So the marketing people had planted it with the CEO to say, like, hey, give this guy some props because he was one of the only ones who predicted it. He's a friend of the brand. And I think it came out like more accusatory that I had somehow like leaked the logo or something. I did not. I had performed triage and said, hey, y'all stop tripping over a logo when you've only seen it in like a trademark filing. Logos are really hard to do. We got to see it in full context. Let's not jump to conclusions. And I actually like the logo, so we can talk Sunday Red and all that. But that's a little bit more.
What is it that you did that? Because when Tiger said next time we do something, or the CEO Taylor May said next time we do something, we're going to call you. What exactly did you do? You found out what their next move, or what happened exactly?
I just accurately predicted that TaylorMade was going to be the company that backed him on his venture as he was leaving Nike. And so I spent 10 years in brand marketing at Nike. I spent 5 years trying to get in that door. I studied Nike. And throughout that time, as a matter of fact, when I got into golf, I played a little bit of golf as a kid, totally dropped it for like, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And then when I was working at the Nike factory store, starting out, trying to chase this dream job in Nike marketing, mm-hmm. I started playing golf, and it was the worst thing. Like, I was the brokest I'd ever been in my life, nearly. And so I'm still to this day, like a bit of a budget golfer. But I knew based on my time in like marketing and then where Tiger was going and like could see all these like clues dropping. And so I was doing videos on why is Tiger leaving? What might he be doing? And where do we think he's going? And it seemed to capture the attention and the energy of the internet. And I had pieced together a few clues from TaylorMade. For example, they had a job listing for a new apparel division that had been listed for a couple for a few weeks. And I just pay attention to the marketing landscape. And so I had seen that job listed. TaylorMade didn't have an apparel division, if you remember, prior to Sunday Red. And so it was like, it was a big time job. It was listed. He did a lot with TaylorMade too. Like, he would do Santa Claus Tiger with them and their content team. For one, their content team is great. Shout out to TaylorMade's content team. But also, Tiger was being like very generous with them. And I know, you know, by the end of his time at Nike, he wouldn't do anything, you know, and he's been
a stingy. Plus, he's stingy.
Yeah. He's being stingy with his appearances, you know? And with TaylorMade, he was quite generous. And so, I don't know. I just pieced together the clues. So that's what they were saying is, hey, if we do this again, we need to come to you to like make sure to keep it tighter and more secret where people can't predict it, you know?
Because when you said Nike wasn't doing anything, did Nike drop the ball on really capitalizing on Tiger greatness, especially on the back nine of his career? Or was he, from your perspective, was he just too old to where Nike said, man, we missed it, get him out of here and we figure something else out, especially in his golf space?
No, it's much more complicated. I mean, how long do you guys have?
I was about to say that. Well, that is a question right
now. Yeah, it's a question. It is a question.
These are all the videos that I made. I would say, in summary, I think Nike, we all try to apply today's golf culture to what was happening 5 years ago, yes, 10 years ago, 10 years 20 ago. Years ago.
Yep.
And we can't have this history. The culture was not ready for it. Like, when Tiger hit, and then Nike Golf Club was trying to do some really innovative things. They were collabing with Eric Costin. They were trying to do some fun stuff. But for a number of reasons, like, it just wasn't breaking through. Jordan wasn't making his golf shoes available to the public yet. They were only available for his celebrity tournament. So there were weird, like, probably people like us three who were, like, into basketball culture, into sneaker culture, and into golf. But, like, they just hadn't woken up to the fact. And so they tried, and it didn't work. And then they pulled out of, like, club equipment. And Tiger was towards the end of his career. Rory wasn't winning. Jason Day wasn't winning. And I think they just kind of sunset it. Nike has bigger fish to fry than the golf community. And so they got to win and running. That's their foundation. They need to prioritize women and, you know, sports that women are participating in on a higher level. And so I just think, you know, Tiger at the end of his career, golf wasn't really doing much for them. They tried, it didn't work. And then all of a sudden, this golf renaissance that we have right now, this year, this last 3 years, really, and everybody's like, oh, where's Nike? Well, they were there, but y'all weren't paying attention back then. And exactly. So anyway, that's the shortest answer I can get there.
I'd say what, Nike's so gangster, though, in how they get out of stuff. Like, if you go back to talk about when they got out of clubs, they just left. They just, Mike Taylor, the team, like, they left all the, you know, in Dallas at the oven. It was just like, you could have just went right in there and just started cooking, because they said the hell with it, and similar to C. But one thing, Jay, that I've noticed with Nike likes that bold athlete, that dynamic, polarizing. When you go back to like the 97 era, and we're not going to make this all about Tiger, but I want to make this point. Go back to 97, Tiger was breaking barriers. Now we have to talk about diversity. He's an icon. He's doing literally everything. I mean, what better statement has he ever said than hello world when you go back to it? Nike doesn't have anyone like that in golf. And when you look at who's doing what? Yes, Scottie Scheffler's number one player in the world. He's winning everything. He needs to find people to play against. Can we get Liv and PGA Tour back together so we can have a damn tour again?
Right.
But I'm saying all this to say, other than Scottie winning, Scottie's boring as hell. Nike doesn't have that polarizing, kick-in-the-door athlete in the game that they once had. And I think that's part of, like, the whole mystique, Will. I know I look crazy, but that's part of the mystique. Why Nike's kind of like, let me get the hell out of here, because, like, who we going to really, you know, like, rock with? Rory? Okay, cool. We got him. But I just don't think there's that. They don't have that guy no more in golf. I don't think that guy exists right now.
I think the key to Nike being that prominent, you know, brand in golf again is to really concentrate on Nelly Korda. That's going to be the key to men golf as well. I mean, Nelly Korda is doing some amazing shit right now, bro. And I feel like Nike is dropping the ball completely. Like,
here would be the one athlete that could pull Nike out of retirement and golf. It's not going to be Nelly Korda. If Nelly starts winning so much that she enters into a men's field, like back, like when Michelle Wie or Anika Thorenstam, that is the disruptive enough that they would come support that type of thing. But outside of that, and it would be better if she were like, you know, in their mind for marketing, if she were a woman of color. So like, you know, she's got a couple more notches. We got to raise that bar up a little bit more. They would totally jump back in, but they're short of that. I don't see them really doing much more.
Well, okay. No, I got so many questions and so many places to go. We didn't want to make this all about Tiger Woods. We want to talk and get into a little bit of the branding and the golf landscape as far as apparel goes. But here's, Jordan, here's what I find interesting. I look at brands like Eastside, Malbon, Quiet Golf to a certain extent.
Yep.
We'll just stay with those three because I think they kind of have kind of that same ethos from the beginning was this disruptive culture. But then I look at brands like a Grayson, no pun intended, with the shirt you rock, and shout out to the Masters and the Grayson collection. Will was there. We went shopping with Will in the Grayson situation.
We appreciate it.
But let's talk about how are boutique brands able to become mainstays, or are they mainstays in this particular window or moment in golf history?
Well, that will be, you know, time will tell, right? We'll see. I think those brands like Eastside and Malbon can have that staying power. You know, I feel like Malbon's been the one who's kind of put the stamp, Eastside on a different wavelength, but powerful as well. Quiet as well. I like Quiet's name, you know, it's a little more subtle. Put them in a kind of a different ballpark, but I think they can. I mean, I've been nerding out on some golf statistics recently.
Bring them in. Let's get some.
Putt. I listened to Perfect Putt on the Golfers Journal recently, a really smart guy. And he said, since 2019, we have 10 million net new golfers in the golf landscape. And I found that really interesting. Now, only 3 million of them are actual green grass on course golfers, and the other
I call them non-top golfers.
Yes, non-top golfers. That's us.
The non-top golfers.
Yeah. So I think there's you know, that's 10 million people who are buying golf gear. So within that, we may have black golfers who want to support, you know, that movement with Eastside Golf. My guy Lanny at Actively Black just launched a golf collection this week. We have Quiet Golf for that kind of Orange County, like subtle, you know, vibe that's tasteful and refined. We've got Malbon who wants to be a little more out there and closer to that streetwear aesthetic. Yep. I see a lot of newer golfers in the Malbon space as well. But I've also heard Steven talk, and I see completely eye to eye with him. He's like, hey, we may not be for everybody, but there's no reason to hate on anybody either. And that's the weird thing about the golf space. And probably any hobby, but it's like, I'm like, go do your thing, Grayson, do your thing, Quiet Golf.
Right.
Like,
absolutely.
Golf space. Okay, cool. I respect it. Like, you know,
it's famine thinking, you know, it's everybody like it's feast and famine, you know, but I like what Malbon saying, everybody can eat in this space. But, you know, when you talk about different brands, you talk about the identity, right? You're talking about, you know, how they approach the marketplace, you know, as you, as such a brand connoisseur and a genius in the space, you know, what is your approach to understanding clients and brand identity? Like, how do you begin that brand process?
I appreciate that. I'm just obsessed with this stuff. I love this stuff. I've been living for golf. I'm living my element, y'all. Like, I've worked in every division, like at Nike. I love basketball is what sold me on this. You can't see, but I have Michael Jordan all over my walls, Charles Barkley. And it, you know, I just got bit by the golf bug 15 years ago. I have a lot of friends, like I have one of my really close friends got bit a year ago. You know, when people, and Lanny at Actively Black, he's taking his golf lessons now. I'm like, hey bro, beware, watch out.
Better come with the come on now.
Yeah. I haven't looked back in the last 15 years. So then you just combine that with brand stuff. So I love it. So I thank you for the words. But brand identity to me, you know, your brand is the space that an individual or company occupies in someone's mind. Okay. Mm. Said a different way, what do people say about you or your brand when you're not in the room? I teach personal branding. So that's what I'm often, you know, encouraging people to think about. What do people say about you? And if you are a brand, you need to be thinking about, like, what is your story? All of this is rooted in story. So when we talk about personal branding, is what is your story and how do you want to represent that to the world in a way that aligns closely with what you actually want to stand for? And so as a brand, we need to root our story in, we root our brand identity in our story. So Nike founded serving athletes. Nike's mission is to bring inspiration and innovation to every athlete in the world. Okay. And they started with runners on Oregon's track. So Phil Knight was a runner for Bill Bowerman. Mm-hmm. And so they founded in running to serve runners, and like maniacally so. They're trying to shed off seconds of their mile. They're trying to make them faster. They're trying to help make their life better. They're trying to help make them, you know, quicker.
Increase and comfort.
Indeed. You know, and so your brand should be rooted in your story. How does it show up? Well, how would people know about you? And so, you know, you take Malbon. He, you know, came from like Frank 151 and that whole world in New York and then LA. And then I actually heard recently he was talking about how he's in the snowboard world and like all this kind of stuff is being a little more loud, like having those sponsors. He comes from the world of streetwear that a lot of us appreciate where you just collaborate. And weirdly, golf lacked that in any kind of meaningful way before. Yeah, and so they're just bringing these things that so many of us have grown to love from sneaker culture or sports culture and brought it into this very protected kind of old school thinking in golf. And there's so many things that we love about old school thinking, but there's a lot of things that we need to, you know, kind of push past in some of the old school thinking in golf.
When we think about thinking, what brand campaign out there right now that you're liking how they're moving, how they're navigating the space?
So one is near and dear to my heart. Reebok just did a collaboration with Pleasures and the Last Prisoner Project, which is an organization trying to free people from incarceration due to marijuana possession. And I was literally, we haven't really talked about my backstory, but I recovered from heroin addiction after a year of incarceration 21 years ago. I was at a prison today speaking to men. And I was released on 420, which I've always found ironic and interesting. My recovery day is 320. And so I spent 13 months incarcerated. That is much longer than most Americans or people in the world will ever spend incarcerated. That is much shorter than some of the people that maybe you and I know, and certainly much shorter than a lot of the men I spoke to today. But it is a passion that I have. So that's what I was a very ardent supporter of the Kaepernick campaign at Nike and happened to be working in American football when we did that. And I support any kind of organization to try to take a stance because we can move the culture to go run and chase by sneakers, but we can also move them for things that we think are good as well. And that's, I think, what we love about the best brands to circle this back. What do we love about Eastside Golf? They're trying to push forward the conversation. They're trying to bring more equity and representation in the sport of golf. That is a mission-based brand. And those are the things that really move us emotionally and that we have connections and that we can remember. So that's one just off the top of my head. I can give you some other more powerful ones, but that's one that I'm really liking.
Well, Jordan, I want to go a little bit deeper because I think so many people will appreciate your story as we've just learned. Is I don't think people understand how tough and how out of nowhere addiction can come. As well as you actually having to take time away from everything, literally, to kind of bounce back. I want to ask you a weird question. How did that time serve you? That 13 months incarcerated.
It's a great question. And I appreciate it because I was actually telling those gentlemen today that this time can serve you if you allow it, you know, I realized that starting at the bottom and then making my way all the way to, you know, whatever top, some the mountaintop in my industry, there certainly could have, I reached higher job titles, but I was in, you know, conference rooms with very fancy people and people have done everything right in their life. And what I found was a lot of these people have just been kind of pulled through life. And so many of us today are in this busy and distracted world. We just want to stop, pause, and think. And so little time for that. I wrote like I teach personal branding. I have this pocket sized guide that's basically inviting people to do what I got the privilege of doing 20 years ago, which is to stop, pause, and think about what do I want my life to actually look like? Yeah. And so we're just being dragged through. A lot of the people I worked with in really cool things are like, they've done everything that everyone around them told them that they should. And it was always the next level. Okay, well, you get good grades in school. Okay, well, now you got to go to a good college. Well, then you get an internship. And then you're going to get at a really cool corporation like Google or Apple or Nike. And then they wake up one day and they're like, I'm supposed to be happy. What am I doing? You know, why do I feel this way?
No, I'm saying, and then you're 50.
Yeah,
exactly. And so I feel so fortunate. I got to, I left Nike 2 years ago. And I think a lot of people were looking at me like, dude, you, and I looked at myself, quite frankly, a couple of times and were like, what are you doing? You worked so hard to get in here. You're at the top of the thing. You're the brand director for Nike basketball in North America. That's all you ever wanted. Are you kidding me? Like, I left because I got to pause. COVID gave us all the opportunity to pause and think about what is it that I want my life to look like. I have to call my bluff. I say that I believe my first order in life to serve God than to serve my wife and my children. And so am I serving them well, sitting in the middle of Portland, Oregon on 9 hours of Zoom calls where they don't have a lot of support and love, and all of our family and friends live here in Dallas, Texas. So that gave me the skill. I say all that to say I learned that skill 20 years ago, incarcerated. Mm. And then through the subsequent process of recovery and getting to step work with people and learning to sort of ideally daily, I'm reflecting on, am I showing up in a way that I want to be showing up? Am I doing the things that are serving those people around me? And I hope that other people can learn that skill, hopefully not through incarceration, but maybe they'll take my workshop or take somebody else's.
Hey, so
and I say it, and it's funny you say that, you know, because I say all the time, like, thinking is like the hardest thing most people never do. And, yeah. You know, and COVID allowed us to do that. But and I kind of want to get a little deeper, and I hope you probably did answer the question, but I want to get a little clarity on it. When you got quiet and you wanted to have that breakthrough in becoming, what was some of the things that you told yourself, like, okay, I have to get to that space? What were some of the affirmations you used, or what was the process?
It was, hey, dude, just don't stick a needle in your arm. I mean, that was like the ground floor was
pretty. Hey, we laughing good. Right now, though. Hold on. That's a real rap.
It's real. I mean, it's really real. Yeah, go ahead.
That's real rap, though.
I'm not lying either. It was like, bro, just don't F this up. Like, you were facing so long in prison right now. It was one, I think I started to surrender to the fact, okay, I had been living this very exciting, intense, overwhelming life, on the run, running from cops, running from people, you know, stealing things and just always in some stuff, you know, failing drug tests and all this. It just was a intense life. And so I was really ready to settle down and just kind of have like a boring life. And I just wanted to just get like a normal kind of job and just go to work and, you know, maybe go to school if I could, and just try to settle down and not be so and have so such an exciting life. And so that was the foundation. And it was really focused on just getting recovery first. And so when I got out, it was about putting one foot in front of the other, trying to do what I could to hold on to recovery. And then it was like everything else will kind of take care of itself. I went to community college and then university. And then I wanted to teach and coach to try to live that out. I was like, hey, I just want to be involved in sports and I want to teach. And I got denied because of my record. I have just a drug possession charge, which is understandable. But that sort of diverted my life then to go chase this Nike dream. And the rest has kind of been history. So it's important to know like the foundations of just how can I take care of myself? There's a great analogy that says we have to put on our own oxygen mask before we can help others, if you think of that airline. And y'all, I'm preaching a lot of this stuff to my friends in corporate America later on. I help a lot of heroin addicts and prisoners today, but like the same message was just going to like fancy corporate people too.
And you can help and you can help a lot of heroin addicts who are CEOs.
Yeah.
Just
there's probably not many of them, but they sometimes struggle with the same thing. You know, do we want to sit and be with ourselves? Can we sit and be with ourselves? Can we just be quiet? Can we be okay with who we are?
My favorite, I guess, hurdle jumping statement is one more day. Just one.
Yeah.
Just one. Don't use or work out in the gym, or kiss your son or daughter, or just be a good husband person for just one more day. Like, do that and then go one more day. But here's what's interesting, or interesting twist on this. You have a firsthand experience on how a brand can change over time. Mm-hmm. As we look at at what we're doing in the golf game, what brands do you see positioned to either change? I just saw McGregor launching new irons, first of all. Like, what in the world?
Was Greg Norman part of that campaign?
Greg Norman, Jose Maria Olazabal, all of them was there. They was getting it cracking. But no, we talk about brands changing over time. Who's got that ability right now where you're looking at them like, you know what? You might be onto something. Aha!
Yeah. Well, I was actually on that same note. I was watching Freddie Couples clips the other day, as one might. And actually, Metalwood sent me this sticker that says, "Keep honking. I'm listening to Fred Couples' 1992 performance at Augusta on YouTube." And I relate to that. I will watch Freddie Couples clips all day if they can show up in my feed. When is Lynx going to come back? Right? Remember that Lynx hat?
Lynx, the cat.
Just the X was dope. Just having the X in the logo was dope. Wakanda forever, baby.
Kind of dope, right? Who has the power to do it? I mean, I think this is the thing that I like about it's not a zero sum game. It's a
surplus mentality.
Exact. Thank you. And so it's like, I think that every brand will do something different. You know, to me, like Metalwood is doing something different in the golf space than Eastside Golf is doing something in the golf space. Manners is doing something in the golf space a lot overseas versus, you know, a Quiet Golf or Students Golf is doing something in the golf space. There's all different ones that are doing some cool things. And so I think collectively we're just stripping it out of the gate-kept, sometimes quite literally gate-kept country club sort of stuffy, like, this is not for you. It's just for rich white people who want rich white men, really, that want to spend 6 hours away from their wife and their kids. That's not the new brand of golf that many of us want. You know, many of us want to be present husbands and fathers, but also play the game that we love. Many of us want to play the game that we love, but wear our hat forwards or backwards.
Jay, when you pick these brands and you wear them, you're like almost like repping your set, repping your hood. Like, I'm with Eastside, cuz I can't be with Trap, or I'm with Malbin. I can't rock with Grayson. Like, I feel like we out here. Will, are they set tripping out here? I don't know what word you want to use, but you almost feel like that when you make a buying decision as a consumer.
It's true. And I try to be Switzerland. You know, I mean, we all probably have our affinities or the brands who treat us the best. You know, I mean, I love TaylorMade personally, but I don't hate, I like the guys at Callaway. I have friends at Callaway, and I think it's such a weird thing for, at least perhaps if you were part of the gatekeeping several years ago, you do want nothing to change. But if you were like me, who thought it was a little like stuffy and like, aren't we supposed to have fun? Like, what are we, you know, I'm not, yeah. I think it's a great balance of respecting tradition, but also like bringing in fashion. And maybe because I often want to have some fashion element, or I just want to be a little different than everybody else. You know, there's room for all.
So when we, and Doug, going to your point, when we, you know, get to that point of, I guess, of internal loyalty that we have to some certain brands, does that mean that the brand campaign that they put out, they put forth, is working? Like, and I guess I want to ask you, and I don't know if you can answer this question, but how do you measure a successful brand campaign? Because I mean, because that's perceived value. That's before the intrinsic value.
I mean, I just, you know, I've hold my finger up and go, does that feel cool? I don't know. Do I feel it here?
Right.
I mean, I'll say I have a luxury at a brand like Nike, who some would argue is a brand company, is a marketing company more than it is an athletic, where
Wow, it's husky right there. Could argue.
And so we were afforded the luxury often, and there's a pendulum. They're going through crazy pendulums right now, but like, we were often afforded the ability to kind of have the art more than the science. I was in brand, so that's a bit more of an art and kind of creative. We were the kind of ones who felt if it was right and kind of pulled it all together. Mm-hmm. Somebody who was in data science or who was in like paid media might be using a bit more of the metrics and quantity, and we would recap that kind of stuff. But right now, ultimately, I'm often basing it on emotion and feel. And so I think there's a great campaign like Tracksmith I've talked about recently.
I don't know Tracksmith. Tell me more. Okay.
Tracksmith is a running company out of Boston. I'm actually going to show you.
Go ahead. God bless Texas, Will.
They are like they're out of Boston, and they're like elite, fancy runners. And so I would argue that their brand actually does a really good job of this. They have this is what their shoebox looks like.
Oh, dope.
So
that tells a story in itself.
Doesn't it? If you're a runner, this connects with you on a visceral level. You say,
yes.
Wow, that's where I get my miles in.
Beyond the Fairway does not endorse or is sponsored by any of these shoes being represented right now.
I had to read it. Hey, but here it is. We want to be sponsored by them.
Your official partner. You have an official footwear?
Nike decided not to renew our contracts. So we, after 5 years, we are on the lam.
We out here. We out here feetless, dog. We're trying to figure it out, cuz.
You don't get your mother flipping feet out the gut.
You do the pendulum quite a bit. And so, you know, I think that I'll give you an example. Titleist is doing a campaign right now that's called Find the Feel. Mm. And they're interviewing people about what's the feeling of like when you hit a sweet iron shot or something, you know? And that's that visceral thing that every golfer can kind of connect with.
Yeah.
On what is that sweet spot? You know, what does everybody say once you hit that one to your friend who kind of sucks?
Unique to Titleist. This is new to Titleist. Titleist has kind of been stuffy, hoity-toity. You buy our shit because you even know we're the best. So just go buy. We'll do our $500 million, $700 million in ball sales. We'll have some clubs for you to try. We'll make them good. But here, like, Titleist is late to, I feel like, this kind of party.
Yeah, I would call Titleist a legacy brand. You know, they have not built that by nothing. They've done it over years. They have Jim Nance's voice. You know, we have association with Jim Nance's voice because Jim Nance is the one who calls the most famous golf tournaments. And so when he's telling us that Titleist is the best, and I think their campaigns have often spoken to that kind of legacy brand. I think a legacy brand who's doing a really good job is FootJoy. I haven't done a video on this. I've been meaning to. I think
FootJoy. Go ahead, let it out. We'll do it right here on Beyond the Fairway, exclusive. All right.
I think FootJoy is one of those brands who's doing a great job of merging their legacy brand with this new renaissance that's happening in golf. So they're doing collaborations with like John Buscemi. They're doing a couple of great collaborations with like Metalwood. Many people thought the Metalwood FootJoy collaboration last year was one of the best shoes of the year. And so I think they're taking those people who are exactly the opposite of, I mean, Metalwood has some of those legacy elements to them, like they love blades, you know, that's their thing. And so it's kind of taking this punk rock communication approach to this legacy golf
legacy situation.
And so you like, this is the best marketing. This is the best things that happen in creativity. Some of the most creative people are taking two things that we don't normally associate with one another and pulling them together. That's what the best brand collaborations do for us. And so when you see FootJoy doing a collaboration with, I don't know, Todd Snyder, suddenly they did an amazing collaboration. Not only do I like FootJoy more because it looks so good, but I was also like, I've never paid half a second to Todd Snyder. And I was like, yo, Todd Snyder, all right, what are you doing? Todd Snyder,
dope. Hey, Will, like, we need some collabs, dog. We out here tripping, man.
No, I'm barefoot out here. Okay, let me ask you a question, brand guru. What is Beyond the Fairway? When you see Doug and I, and we're in the space of trying to bring culture and an intersection of culture and golf, we're trying to sit up at the intersection like 7-Eleven, right? What would you, if you were a brand, excuse me, if you were a brand, and he's like,
marketing company,
sorry. If you want to link up with us, or what are some of the things we're missing or we need to be in that space? I probably had to answer that question. I got to clear that question.
He going to send us an invoice for this.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know.
I'm going to give you guys that great rate for this consulting. But I was going to look at your Instagram.
There's going to be stages of our Instagram. Like your life, we've got okay. eras. We're in a new era right now.
Yes.
I hope the era that you're in is vertical video, because that's the era that we live in, and that's what brands really care about. So vertical video. So if you're taking an audio podcast, maybe you can do reads, which is great. But every brand is looking for more presence on Instagram or TikTok to try to get younger. So it depends on the brand, though. So what you two have as men of color, you have the opportunity to take these corporations and call the bluff that they've been giving us since 2020. And you have the opportunity to go, oh, you want to serve the Black community. We are so excited that you want to serve the Black community.
Boy, I've been Black my whole life. This is so great.
Boy, do we have a show for you. Look at us kicking down the door in the golf industry. You want to break barriers? Come with us. We would love to break barriers. Oh, you want to invest in the Black community? Oh, we have a place for you to invest your money right here. Let's do it. Oh, you have a
we try to say that, like, you know, I say it sometimes, brands don't know how to speak to other audiences. And, you know, we try to come across as like, hey, Beyond the Fairway, we are the bridge to help you get there. You know, we're not so much focused on us, but we can tap into your frequency and what you're trying to convey, who you're trying to reach. And it's basically everybody grow through golf. Just about
absolutely.
Just about
it. Let me ask you, like, who is your standard listener? Like, who makes up the majority of that kind of middle portion of your listenership?
Let me give you this. This is our fourth season. We did three seasons with NBC. Will and I have now taken our show independent. We are producing this, paying out of our own pockets to keep going with what we had. To be quite honest with you, the way that the corporate rigmarole has worked for Will and I, we don't know. We don't know, but we get called out in public by Black people the most. Hey, man, why y'all ain't say something about this, that, or the third? It's like, okay, so Black people, check. Had a white dude say, hey, love your show until you start talking about the Black. Sort of them too. We've got that.
I get a little uncomfortable about it, Will.
That's a real topic we've got. You know, I think what's so interesting about golf is that the people at the top of organization and companies, they haven't changed in years, but the product has changed. And so I think golf needs a rebranding, if you will. Especially as some of these baby boomers are starting to retire and die. I'm sorry to be morbid, but like, that's just a fact. But
those baby boomers, though, are the guys that are still somewhat the gatekeepers. And I hate to say it.
Yeah, no question.
And even though there's segments of golf, you know, having a new optically changing. But the gatekeepers are still the ones that are still keeping golf somewhat the same.
Same people, man. It's the same people.
As a matter of fact, I read the statistics the other day. I think in the new, I'm a nerd, so I screenshotted them. Let's see here. The statistics of those new golfers.
Let it out.
34% of them are Black. 36% are youth, 6 to 17. 13% are occasional golfers. 15% are female. 21% are Hispanic. So
I need to speak more Spanish.
See. Or you could just, you know, if
cuatro,
yo, grabla español, si, vivo en Texas. If we need to do that, we can. But I would take those. There's probably some more of those gatekeepers or the legacy brands, and look, having been in a corporation, I do think there's a lot of people who are sitting around those conference tables who do want to be more diverse, who want to get in a better audience, and so you just have to. This is always the principle for people. If you build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I've been focused on for years. Like, if I just make good content, people will see it and people will share it. Everybody wants to blame the algorithm. It's the algorithm's fault. No. Perhaps maybe your content isn't the stuff that's cutting through. And so what is it that your audience is wanting to hear? What do they find really compelling? What do they find really interesting? And how do they consume it? And so that's where a vertical video is such a powerful thing. I mean, if it weren't for vertical video, I don't think you guys would really care to have me on this podcast. You know, I mean, that stuff has cut through. And so those brands want to cut through. So I would say double down on your vertical video, which you're doing here. Be having a lot of clips from this. And then go to those brands and look for the ones who said, we want to invest in the community in different ways, and say, hey, we'd love for you to do that. We've got great opportunities. And I would say, to the degree that you can expand, they all want their dollar to go further. So like, hey, we've got an audio read. We will do, we share vertical video recaps of our things. And then I'm sure you guys do some sort of, you know, on-site reporting or do a tournament or whatever. And then you be a part of this tournament and get them involved in meaningful ways. The last thing I would just say is, and you find those authentic connections. So who are the brands who are trying to reach a Black golf audience? Who are the brands who need to expand a little more to survive? And you have that gateway and you're trying to help them do that in a meaningful way, whether that's any type of product. And furthermore, sorry, I'm going further down.
Go ahead, preach. No. It's Sunday, preach.
What are the problems? What are the problems that are uniquely facing Black golfers? And what are the brands that are helping overcome those problems and those barriers? That is where you're going to start to find the real synergy with brands. Now, look, we've got issues in this country. There's big issues that Black golfers may be facing. But I don't know. Are there some opportunities there? Anyway, go ahead.
To that point, I told Doug this all the time, you know, especially back in 2020, I felt like we were on borrowed time.
Damn, Jordan, I got to re-pour while we out here.
I told Doug and everybody, I feel like we're on borrowed time when it comes to brands and really want to be a part of this movement, right? And yeah. And as we are starting to kind of exit the optics or the George Floyd era, starting to see those brands are like, you know what, we're good. We escaped that. Whew, we clear. You know what I'm saying? We're good to go out here.
That wasn't doing the profits too great.
Hey, it only cost us X.
Had to fire the diversity officer, but whatever. We've got that behind
right.
us.
Right, exactly. So it's like now.
It's racist like now. To have a diversity officer, Jordan. What are you talking about? That's racism.
Last question, Jay, and I do want to be conscious of your time. When we talk about building brands, and what do we do to the young junior golfers who are trying to position themselves to be, approached by some of the top brands when they have yet to, you know, really hit the pinnacle in their respective discipline?
Yep. Well, this topic's near and dear to my heart. I travel the country teaching personal branding to college athletes. I've been doing that primarily over the last 18 months. So I love meeting with college golfers. And there's a real challenge and there's a decision they have to make. In the same way that I told you, vertical video is what rules the day today. Vertical video is what rules the day for college athletes. And if you want visibility, athletes have two pathways, really. One, just be dominant in your sport. If you do that, you take care of all the rest. It doesn't matter.
Winning cures everything.
Winning cures everything, right? What did we start this podcast? Someone was saying that Scottie Scheffler was boring. But you know what? We all know who Scottie Scheffler is.
I said that.
I know. I wrote in my newsletter this last week. I'm coming around on Scottie. I actually think we need more people like Scottie.
Oh, no, I didn't say he wasn't a great man. I just said he was boring.
Yeah, that's fair.
There are a lot of great people that are boring.
Boring.
If you saw a headline that said Scottie Scheffler pulled over drunk, you'd be like, what the? Your feelings would be hurt. That's what I mean, boring. Like, I'm sorry.
Jesus was born until we found out all the great acts that he did. And Scottie was born until I found out he went back-to-back players. Okay. So, yes.
Was ruffling some feathers, though. You know, I mean, he was healing people.
That is true.
He was flipping over tables. Anyway, but these golfers are they got two things. One, win, dominate, and you'll be great. Everybody will know your name. Two, get active on social with vertical video. And I do think a lot of athletes are overthinking this. I have great videos. There's a video that I've been thinking about. Minwoo Lee is one of my favorite golfers on tour. Because he's just so entertaining. I just think he has a great brand. Okay. I could watch Minwoo Lee. I could name probably 50 golfers that I would just watch them swing the golf club over and over. Jake Knapp won a tournament recently. He has
Mexico
an amazing
Open. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned Kelly Norda. I would watch her swing. Nelly Korda. Sorry. I would watch her swing.
Keep that in here.
There are so many golfers that Anthony Kim hasn't played professionally in 15 years, whatever it is. And I love watching his swing. So,
finished last today and live out of lean will, and also made 50 grand. No big deal. I just want,
I mean, I guess this is a whole nother conversation. I'm gonna get out.
Hey, you know what, Jay, if you don't mind, we'd like for you to be reoccurring to check in so we can get our brand stuff. But I think more and more people, especially in this era, need to hear from people like you, because there is this notion that you are a business. Like what Jay-Z say, I'm not a businessman, I'm a business man. And I think Jay-Z was very
ahead of his time.
I wouldn't say that. I was going to say prophetic in that statement, because he's right. We all are brands. I'm a brand. Will's a brand. Will and I have a brand together. You're et cetera. But the only way that we can let you out of here is the only way that we know how. And that's Rap Foursome right here on Beyond the Fairway podcast. Jordan Rodgers. Look, you're going to go play golf with four golfers. You're playing a five ball. So there's five of y'all. You four rappers, not country music stars. I saw God Bless Texas in the background earlier. I'm talking about four rappers. You, four of them. Who you pulled up to the course with?
Quattro.
Why do you do that?
Well, I need to resurrect Pimp C since I'm from Texas.
Wow. Mm. Wow. Didn't see that one coming.
Pimp C.
With the Grayson shirt that threw you off. Pimp C, I mean, I just... Let's see. Gosh, that's a tough question.
People think it's easy.
I think I would have to. I would want business mentorship from Jay.
Of course, smart man. So Jay and Pimp C on the golf course.
Jay and Pimp C there. We got a track there. The Big Pimpin. I really love Tupac, so I'd have to bring Tupac back.
Bring him. We're gonna get him in here.
Golly. And you know who else I love? I love DMX. So I'm going to bring DMX back.
Dang. You're going to have dogs barking with some tipping on fofo. Yeah. All right. I got it.
Wait. So we have DMX, Tupac, Pimp C, Jay. That's it. That's my four. Shoot.
There it is. But no, nah, man. Hey, Jordan, we appreciate you, man, stepping in here, going beyond the fairway with us, man. Sunday afternoon, we just finished. A fantastic finish at the Zurich. Roy McIlroy, Shane Lowry taking the W, man. But look, Jay, we got to get you up out of here, man. As always, we appreciate you, and we'll holler at you, sir. Will and I, we got more shit to do. So, hey, man, thanks for stepping in here.
Absolutely, bro. All right, Doug, we are done. We are out of here. First and foremost, we have to thank everybody who is listening to our podcast. Shout out to JR, a.k.a. Jordan Rogers, the brand guru, brand, can't think of a big word. Sensei, yes, Miyagi, brand Miyagi up in this joint. So we're asking all our viewers to subscribe, to leave a comment on YouTube, wherever you get your podcast, listen, subscribe, do all that good stuff. And Dougie and I are about to head to Bandon Dunes.
I'm terrified.
Doug Smith, and Roger Steele. And I'm about to bust y'all ass. It's just that simple. Real quick, before we get out of here, I would love to get a response from our audience. Who do y'all think will be victorious? We're just going to do one course. We're going to do Pacific Dunes. We're playing a multiple course, but I want to say on one course, we're going to play Pacific Dunes, despite the weather.
Second 18 of day one.
Second 18 of day one. Who do y'all think will be victorious between myself, Will Lowry, Doug Smith, and Roger Steele? And please leave those comments.
First of all, listen to Will. Go in the comments, smash the like button, number one. Go in the comments, let us know who you're going to think. I don't even think these guys can compete, like wind and stuff. Roger's not even a factor. It's basically me versus Will in real golf where it matters. Anyway, we'll be back next week, man. We're going to talk more. Hey, yo, we got to talk a little bit about the increased rates in tea time prices have outpaced the U.S. inflation. That's something we got to get into. That's more important about me busting you and Roger ass at Bandit. But hey, yo, be on the fairway. Like, listen, subscribe. Do all this shit you got to do. Share this with somebody. If you got value out of this, let us know, man. Hit us up everywhere we at, man. We appreciate y'all. Holla at you. Man, cheers up. Bottoms up.
Hey, Doug, we also going to talk about how these parents is trying to get the NIL deals for these kids.
You mean the parents are trying to get NIL deals? Robbing their kids. Got it.
That too.
Okay. Yeah. Next week, be on the fairway. We'll be back.
Hell yeah.